Hey, how's your summer going? The weather here in Ireland has given us lots of opportunities to go to the beach. I'm all about having a swim in the sea, and I know most listeners are too. But how often have you gone to the beach and seen something wild?
Seen spiders, fish, but not really that cool creatures. Except my brother Mateo, that's a monkey. But no, because they haven't really gone that far underwater. Because most of the time I have like cuts or stuff, and I don't really want to go into the water when I have cuts.
I haven't seen them on the beach, but I think narwhals are really cool.
When I was like 2 to 5, me and my family lived in Singapore, and sometimes we went to the beach and then there was water, but then the water, there was a line with a lot of those jellyfishes that sting. So everyone was like climbing up the sand to not touch the water, because then they would touch the tentacles.
I've went to a beach in Gran Canaria and we've spotted a lot of hermit crabs, and they were making their way like to where like the water meets the sand, and it was really cool.
Oh, I've never seen a hermit crab. That's very cool. Our oceans are a subject that everyone seems to have an opinion on, and our youth panel was passionate to talk about it too. After all,
71% of the Earth's surface is covered with water. But how much attention do we give to our oceans when we're thinking about climate change? Today, we're dipping our toe into the world of marine life. Let's start with David. How often do you consider the sea in relation to your climate action?
I live in Mayo, really close to the sea, and I'd consider it a lot because it is responsible for so much. Like, the algae that grows in the oceans is responsible for absorbing so much of the greenhouse gases that our factories and our countries would produce. The oceans like fed people for like thousands of years with like fishing and the natural resources from it.
Mara, your name actually means of the sea in Irish, I believe.
It does, yeah.
So how big of a role does ocean life play in your activism?
It's massive. I've always had a huge affinity to the sea, obviously my name, and I'm from Wexford, which is a coastal county. So I just have super fond memories of it. And I was actually watching David Attenborough's new documentary, and he said that he's nearly 100 years old and he's realised that at this point, the most important part is actually the life in sea, not on land.
Dana, do you think we consider marine life enough when we're talking about climate change?
I really don't think that people consider marine life enough. For example, myself, I'm a huge activist. I do lots of stuff for the environment, but generally, I wouldn't really consider the sea. But, you know, so many species live in the sea. We rely on it so much for fishing, for water sports, for tourism. So it is really important that we do consider the sea.
And Arjun, how often does the sea come into your thoughts about the climate crisis?
As we all say that 71% of the Earth is full of ocean sand, yet it's one of the things that we haven't discovered deeply as we have on the other land areas. Research in the oceans, especially for how we can tackle the climate conditions, is also really important. Ever since we were hunter-gatherers, we started to fish, and we used all the sea creatures as a way for us to survive. And now we are polluting the same as well. So I believe it's highly important to raise awareness among the youth and among the entire population that we have to make sure that we provide the ocean the same way that they did when we needed it.
I totally agree. We benefit so much from the ocean that it's in our interests to protect it in all the ways we can. And today we're going to discuss some of the largest creatures in the world that call the sea home. Whales.
My name is Melanie White, and I am the North Atlantic Right Whale Conservation Project Manager for the Clearwater Marine Aquarium Research Institute based in Clearwater, Florida. I manage 3 field teams. As much work is being done in the walls of the Clearwater Marine Aquarium, we do a lot of rescue, rehabilitation, and ultimately we hope to release any injured or sick marine animals that come into the aquarium. We do a lot of work outside of the walls of the aquarium, and so I run the North Atlantic Right Whale Project. I run 3 field teams in the wintertime that conduct North Atlantic right whale surveys. Throughout the winter, we're taking to the sky in small airplanes anywhere from about 20 to 40 miles offshore, searching for the North Atlantic right whale on their only known calving grounds, which is in the southeastern United States. We're searching for these right whales and their newborn calves. So we're basically just searching the ocean for these large whales. We know that they come down to give birth to their live young in the wintertime. We are responsible for taking photographs of any whale that we see. We also provide location information of any and all whale sightings that we see, so we can help tried to reduce the potential of any whale vessel collisions, and that's a really big problem for the right whales. And so by not only seeing them and taking photographs of them, we know of their location, so we can provide that information in almost real time to a lot of the mariners that are offshore in the waters where these whales are spending time in the winter months.
Safeguarding whales, even when it's purely observational, can prove tricky.
It can be challenging, you know, it's like a needle in a haystack. You're looking, you know, as we're searching the ocean, that ocean can be very calm. It can also have white caps on it. Those white caps can easily hide or mask whale activity. And so it takes a lot of training to just, you know, focus in on a dark body or a lot of white caps to be triggered that there's something out there that could be creating those white caps below the surface. Whales are mammals just like humans, and they have to come up to the surface. They breathe air just like we do. We know that they have to come up to the surface and get that oxygen. That's when we see them. You know, these whales, they can reach lengths of about 50 to 60 feet long. They can weigh upwards of about 70 tons, which is a really heavy whale. They surface to breathe air. The calves obviously also are going up to the surface. They don't have nearly as large a lung capacity as mom. So oftentimes the calf will be at the surface much more frequently than the adult will, because the adult is much more capable of holding its breath for a longer period of time, if it so chooses to.
The image of a whale calf just starting out into the world is one few of us will ever see. And not just because right whales are now so rare. They have a relatively small area that they are born in.
For the North Atlantic right whale, there seems to be a consistency as to the waters off the coast of Georgia and Florida. And that may have a lot to do with the fact that, you know, these whales are giving birth to a newborn calf. And so the calf is trying to grow. It's feeding on mom's milk. And it's also trying to become a better swimmer. And so these particular areas could be potentially weaker currents or calmer waters. And so as a newborn, it takes a lot of time to figure out what to do and how your body works and how you move and how you survive. And so coming to areas where there could be calmer waters, you know, it allows them to focus more on just being able to feed and grow. And also, we don't believe that there's really any predation that could potentially be happening. So slightly more beneficial to be spending time with a newborn calf for however long they need to be there before they start their migration north with their mothers to head back up to the feeding grounds.
Sadly, even with the best start in life, the journey to the feeding ground for those whales and all marine life is increasingly treacherous.
So unfortunately, the threats to these whales is all man-made activity. So back in the days of whaling, these whales were hunted in mass extinction. They're referred or called the right whales because they were the really highly targeted species to go after. They spent a lot of time at the surface. They're not very fast swimmers. And so these whales were easy targets for the whalers. And so their numbers really drastically reduced. And nowadays, their threats are still human activities. So we have entanglements in fishing gear. We have vessel strikes. These are major problems for the population. It doesn't matter if you're in a large tanker or a sailboat. You know, these whales are very susceptible to injuries, and it's a huge problem.
With so many problems facing them, I wonder what age a right whale can live to.
It's interesting. The oldest known right whale was a whale named Scoop. And it's an adult male, and that means that that whale this year is 65 years old. I mean, that's incredible to think about, that these whales can survive for decades in the open ocean. We think they can live even longer. Again, you know, probably closer around 60, maybe even 80 years old, so long, again, as they're able to withstand the threats that we provide them with on a daily basis.
Melanie and other marine biologists protect and survey whales so as to help educate all of us about their importance. But there are others who take a more controversial approach. One day last summer, while cycling along the Liffey, we spotted a large ship moored up against the quay, and we didn't want to miss an opportunity to send two cub reporters on board to see what was up.
I'm Rosa, and when I grow up, I'd like to be a marine biologist.
I'm Siv, I'm Rosa's sister.
And today we've come to a special ship that's on the Liffey.
Rosa and Siv were warmly welcomed by a smiling Australian, very willing to speak with them.
We're going up into the bridge, the helm station and everything.
Hello, my name's Dior, and I am one of the media crew on board the John Paul Jura.
We're here in Dublin because we were invited by the Irish chapter of the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. It is on the way to where we're going, so up round towards like Greenland, and it was just a good place to stop and get some fuel and store up.
Can you tell us about the chef?
So the John Paul DeJoria is part of Neptune's Navy, so it's the Captain Paul Watson Foundation. Basically, we are saving whales. The whole crew is dedicated to campaigns. We were previously supposed to go to Iceland to fight against the Icelandic whalers there. But yeah, the whole foundation is based on saving the oceans, basically. Doing what we can. We are like a direct action conservation group. All run off volunteers on board. So everyone just comes and dedicates their time and their effort to do their part to protect the oceans.
What was it that made you want to join Neptune's Navy?
I grew up in Tonga swimming with whales in a family business. I obviously am obsessed with whales. I love whales. And I wanted to do my part in saving them and being a part of this crew because I think they're doing an amazing thing for the world. It's been really fun, but like a great learning experience and just a very fulfilling thing to do.
Dior was a long way from Tonga, but she agreed to show us around the ship, her new home from home.
Oh, where all the crew hang out, sometimes watch movies, whatever.
How long are you going to be at sea?
Don't actually know. We're doing a big passage to the Arctic, actually, and it might take anywhere between a couple of weeks to maybe over a month. Depends on all the ice up there.
How many people actually live on board?
At the moment, I think there's about 26 or 27 of us. So there's quite a lot. We're lucky. This is actually an old Scottish Fisheries patrol vessel. It's rare to have a ship with this much accommodation. So we're pretty lucky, actually. We've all got our own private cabin.
What's it like living on a boat, and have you ever gotten seasick?
I have gotten seasick. I grew up on boats, so I'm quite used to it. But it's pretty cool. It's very different to life in a house. Obviously, your backyard's changing all the time. You're parked in different places all the time. And I think the main differences are whoever's on the boat is the only people you're going to see. So when we do long passages, that's all you're going to see, those people that you've got. You can't go out to the shops, you can't, like, go for a walk, all that stuff. But it's good fun, and you see a lot of cool stuff because you're always on the ocean. You'll always see the sunrise and the sunset and, like, dolphins and all this cool stuff. I'm really happy to be here. I'm not like, I want to go home. I'm like, this is great.
Does it get claustrophobic on a boat?
Definitely people have been feeling that because you can't, like, go out and go for a walk or, like, go for a swim or something. But if you go outside and, like, look at the horizon, get the wind in your hair, it's fine.
I guess the more time you spend at sea, the more you connect with it. And maybe you see why we need to protect it so much.
I've seen a lot of videos where there's a bunch of trash and plastic all over the sea. I think we should change that fact.
Not like throw litter away. We could pick up the litter that's on the beach.
It's very bad for the animals. I've seen a video where a paper straw got stuck up a turtle's nose and it was so sad. And they had to try get it out.
I think we should try to protect the sea, to look after the animals that live there.
I'm with you. I really want to protect sea creatures. But as we mentioned before, Neptune's Navy take a more radical approach than doing beach cleans.
What is Neptune's Navy?
Neptune's Navy is like the group. We work under the Captain Paul Watson Foundation, which is this big worldwide foundation. Captain Paul Watson also founded Sea Shepherd and worked with Greenpeace.
What's the difference between being a charity that looks after whales and a direct action group that looks after whales?
As a direct action organisation, we are actively going in there and stopping people from killing marine life. We call it aggressive non-violence. So we'll go in there and we will like intervene, we'll drive our boats in the way. We've got a water cannon on the boat, we'll like use that. So we don't want to hurt anyone, but we do want to like actively get in there and physically stop them from killing whales. Whereas like I'd say a charity is probably more awareness, the political side of things, but we're like, we go in there and we fight.
Is that a bit scary?
Well, I haven't done one of the campaigns yet where we've actually been fighting. I've only been on board for like a bit over a month now, but I imagine it can be scary at times because you're out on the ocean, there's so many things that can go wrong, the opposing side, the hunters and everything can get very upset about things like that. And there's also like the legal side of things because there's different laws on the ocean, so it can be scary.
Who drew that mermaid picture over there?
Actually, I did. I did that when I was on watch the other morning from 4 a.m. till 8 a.m.
Dior and the other crew members are undoubtedly passionate about whales, and mermaids too, it would seem. And while many people question their approach, their love of whales is what motivates them.
Why do you think it's important that we take direct action to protect the sea creatures?
So whales are extremely important to the ocean. They are responsible for moving a lot of nutrients around the world because of their migration. And actually, them just pooing in the sea provides a lot of nutrients to the ocean. And then when they die, there's something really fascinating called whale fall. The whale's body, when it dies, it will fall through different layers of the ocean. And it provides nutrients throughout every single different layer. And when it reaches the bottom, like the seafloor,
kind of things that kind of eat like the skin and stuff until it's like only a skeleton, and then there's still little bits of moss that grow on them, and then it like becomes a good place. It could become like if there's like a sunken ship, like the Titanic has probably become like a coral reef kind of like thing, because that's where the animals get to live now because they had been with no home, so then it would be a good place for fish to have their homes.
Exactly, yeah. And when it reaches the seafloor as well, it's still got so much meat and like nutrients in it that it actually provides enough nutrients for 50 years for all the creatures at the bottom of the ocean. So you think of every whale that dies, that's how much nutrients the ocean needs. So every whale that we're taking out of the ocean affects everything. All those small little organisms that feed bigger ones, that feed bigger ones, that feed bigger ones. And then the ocean is so important for our health as well, providing more oxygen than forests, actually. And the health of the ocean really affects the health of the planet overall.
I think I've said circular more in this series than ever before. But Melanie does back up just what Dior says. We are all part of a circle that starts and ends with how we treat the planet.
It needs to be a clean ocean. I mean, I think the major problem is that, again, we're so interconnected. So the smallest creatures in the ocean are so connected to the larger creatures. You know, right whales, they feed on copepods. It's a type of animal plankton or zooplankton. And so these large whales that weigh almost 70 tons eat some of the smallest creatures, you know, in the ocean. These copepods, these animal plankton, they're about the size of a single grain of rice. And so can you imagine a whale reaching lengths of over 50 feet long? That's all they eat. That's it. That's the only thing that they eat. And so it's so important that at the bottom of the food chain, you have a healthy environment so that food chain can work through the, you know, the web and get up to the whales. And the same is true for us that eat seafood or, you know, rely on the marine environment. You know, not only whales, but turtles and fish and dolphins. You know, there's so much that is so important to have a healthy ocean. And these animals don't stand a chance if the ocean isn't healthy.
Neptune's Navy on their Sea Shepherd vessels cover lots of areas and try to protect many kinds of whales. Campaigning by many people beside their organisation has led to a postponement of whale fishing off Iceland this year, which is a great step. But the outlook for right whales, once so abundant, is not as bright as we'd wish.
Having the opportunity to work specifically with right whales for the past 16 years, it's been really exciting to have the opportunity to watch the life cycle of these whales and seeing a newborn calf 1 year, a decade later, give birth to its own calf. And so that's been great. Unfortunately, it's not all good news. When I started doing these aerial surveys, we used to have a lot more calves each year. And so my first year, we had 28 calves born in that single year. You know, that was pretty standard. You know, in the early 2000s, the average right whale number of calves being born every season was about 23, which may not sound like a lot, but when you have a population less than, you know, right now, 400, every calf is so vitally important. Unfortunately, in the past 5 years, that average has dropped to about 8 whales in a single season. There was 1 year very recently that not a single calf was born, and that has never been the case. That was the first time in history that there was not a single calf born, and that's really devastating for a population. If you kind of do the quick math of what is it going to take for these whales to really bounce back and increase that population, we need these whales to be giving birth to 20 or more calves each year, and to have a zero is astronomically terrible for the population. It just gives you that much more energy and want to continue to help the species. And it's something that, you know, we can all play a part to try to help.
That part could be as simple as doing a beach clean or talking with others about the impact we're having on the ocean. You don't have to run away with the Navy, but we really do need to give whales and other sea creatures a chance, even if it's unlikely we'll come across one in the wild. If you did, though, what do you think you should do?
If I would see a whale in the sea, I would be really interested and I would take a lot of photos.
First of all, make sure that I would go a bit farther away from the whale so the whale doesn't start attacking my boat. And then second of all, I would like to take some pictures because it is, of course, cool to see a whale.
Either just stare for a little bit and then swim for my life.
But if it would be outside the sea and on the sand, I would like immediately call someone to help the poor whale. Call service or something, since I wouldn't want it to die.
What's your favorite sea creature that you've ever seen?
That's a hard one. So many. I just love swimming with whales. That's probably my favorite.
What's the best thing humans can do if there's a whale close by?
The best thing to do is probably keep a bit of a distance so that you're not imposing on whatever they're doing, because we never know what they're up to. Like, maintain a respectful distance and keep calm, because they don't like it when you, like, panic. Like any wild animal, you know? But the whales are the most gentle creatures. But, yeah, probably just stay a respectful distance and, like, enjoy it.
As Dior said earlier, she's one of the lucky few who had the opportunity to be close to the whales in the sea, close to where she used to live.
I love sea creatures. They're just amazing. You grew up swimming with whales. What was that like?
I don't really remember much before I was swimming with whales. I started when I was about 7 or 8 years old. I think it's amazing. I think it's one of the most amazing things you can ever see and experience. That's probably very biased, but I think it gives you a real insight into, like, the importance of the oceans as well. Like, it made me extremely passionate about protecting the oceans and doing our part. And I absolutely love all sea creatures as well.
What kind of whales did you swim with?
So I was swimming with humpback whales, which are really beautiful whales. Luckily, they're not the ones that are being hunted. Sei whales, fin whales and brooder's whales are the ones being hunted, and they're all quite endangered.
Why are the whales that you've mentioned the most hunted whales?
That's a good question. Fin whales are the second largest mammals on the earth, so I guess hunting them is quite a big bounty of meat. I don't know why it's particularly those species. I think it's because they're the most in those areas that they're hunting, but they're also probably the tastiest.
How do people get involved with Neptune's Navy, and how does it work?
There's many ways you can get involved. We have a lot of onshore volunteers, like we have the Irish chapter here. They help organise donations and events and all the media side on land. And then we have the volunteers on the ship. People can volunteer their time. Or you can just donate, help raise awareness. We have a lot of stuff available on the website for more information, paulwatsonfoundation.org.
Have you ever seen a blue whale while you were hunting?
For hunters. I have seen a blue whale back in Australia, where I'm from, and that was amazing, but we're hoping to see a lot more. A blue whale is a lot bigger than a bus. It's probably about 2 buses long and weighs about the same as well, if not heavier. It can be up to 80 tonnes, a big blue whale, fully grown, which is about 80 small cars. Their hearts are about the size of a small car, and you could crawl through their arteries.
It's kind of disgusting. Standing.
That was just a size comparison.
I'm glad to hear that. Thanks so much to Dior and the crew for giving us their time on their Sea Shepherd. To find out more about the work, just search for Sea Shepherd Global online, and to Melanie White in the Clearwater Marine Aquarium Research Institute in Florida. Again, you can find out lots more about their efforts on land and in the oceans via their website. Whether the action you take for our oceans is learning more about the life we need to protect with MPAs off our coast, or keeping rubbish out of our waterways, we all have a part to play. And you can plan for it, because whales need our help.
The whales are out there, and that's fantastic, but they could easily disappear, even in our lifetime. You know, this population, this species, the North Atlantic right whales, could literally go extinct in our lifetime, and that is really hard to take, but that's why it gives you that much more motivation to do what we can to save these species. I think fishing and whales can exist. The technology is there. The fishing industry that we know of today has the ability to kind of shift gears and change their abilities of how to catch fish so that both the whales and the fishing communities can still coexist. There's so many creative people in the world to potentially make it work. And the major problem with fishing gear is that the vertical lines that are from the surface down to the bottom of the ocean or wherever the gear is that they're trying to target the fish, it's those vertical lines that are so detrimental to potentially the whales. They can easily get wrapped up in that. There is work being done right now to try to minimize the number of vertical lines in the water and to minimize and become less of a problem so that the fishermen can still fish and the whales can still swim, but they're not necessarily interacting together. And I think it can happen. I hope it can happen. Unfortunately, it needs to happen now because the population is so low that, you know, we can't wait another 20 years before we figure out how to make this work. We unfortunately need that now.
Sure, it's a really cool boat thing.
Ecolution is produced by Nikki Coughlin with production assistance from Aoife O'Neill, and it's presented by me, Evie Kenny. Now, why not head over to the RTE Kids YouTube channel to see what our panel think in our video spin-off.
This is our
RTE Junior Podcast!
For more sorts of RTE Kids podcasts,